Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized, text number 58. Yada samharite chayam, kamangani vasarusha, indriyarniyartevyas, tasya prajna pratishtita. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects as a tortoise draws its limbs within the shell is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. In this translation, in purport. The test of a yogi, devotee, or self-realized soul is that he is able to control the senses according to his plan. Most people, however, are servants of the senses and thus directed by the dictation of the senses. That is the answer to the question, how the yogi is situated. The senses are compared to venomous serpents. They want to act loosely and without restriction. The yogi or the devotee must be very strong to control the serpents, like a snake charmer. He never allows them to act independently. There are many injunctions in the revealed scriptures. Some of them are do-nots, and some of them are do's. Unless one is able to follow the do's and the do-nots, restricting oneself from sense enjoyment is not possible to be firmly fixed in Krishna consciousness. The best example set herein is the tortoise. The tortoise can at any moment wind up its senses and exhibit them again at any time for particular purposes. Similarly, the senses of the Krishna conscious person are used only for some particular purpose in the service of the Lord, and are withdrawn otherwise. Arjuna is being taught here to use his senses for the service of the Lord instead of for his own sense satisfaction. Keeping the senses always in the service of the Lord is the example set here by the analogy of the tortoise who keeps the senses within. Yata samharite chayam karmangani vasarvashaha indriyarniyartevyas tasya pragya patishtita. One is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. What's the word for tortoise? And this is the summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter. And here Krishna is explaining about how the yogi operates within this world. A yogi means one who's connected with Krishna. And the next verse, more or less, is an explanation of this verse. Vishaya vinivartante nirharasyadehinam rasavarjam rasopyasyap ramdishva nivartate. That the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. Here we have the example of the tortoise. And when the tortoise isn't doing anything, then it puts its limbs back into the shell. So similarly, we have a choice in the material world. Either we engage our senses in the service of Krishna, or engage our senses to gratify the senses. Now, normally in the material world, there is no choice. Because normally in the material world, especially in this age, people don't know that they have a choice. And therefore, they only have one choice. They think they have a choice, just like they have different brands of piva, beer. So people think they have a choice, either brand A or brand B. They don't know that they have a choice not to drink piva. That's also a choice. But as explained here, that everything depends upon our taste. Because we're living entities, naturally we want to be happy. We want happiness. And therefore we'll choose anything that we think was going to make us happy. Now we get some superior happiness, The example is given that sometimes they have what's called sweet rice. It's a combination of rice and milk and sugar cooked very nicely together. But if it's instead of adding sugar, you add sand, the taste is not quite as good. So if you eat sandy rice, then it becomes normal. The milk is nice, the rice is good, the sand is, well, a little crunchy. Now, if one time you get sweet rice, instead of the sand they add sugar, it's even nicer. So the next time when you cook sweet rice, you'll probably add sugar rather than sand, because it's a better recipe. So similarly, we ourselves are spiritual beings, and we want happiness, we want pleasure. And there is a kind of happiness, although it may not be a positive happiness, when the senses meet their objects in the material world. In other words, when the senses are demanding something, they're pushing us towards something, it's very unpleasant. We call that anxiety. Sometimes they call it hankering. Sometimes in Kali Yuga they call it love. We think when our senses meet their objects, then I'll become happy. And indeed, there is a kind of happiness when the senses meet their objects. For instance, if we're very hungry and we get something to eat, it doesn't matter what it is. If we're extremely hungry, it tastes fantastic. Of course, there's a taste, and also there's an alleviation of hunger. So in the material world, it is said, bhakti parashanu vyaktir anyatra trika ekakala prapanama nasya yatashnatas tus tushti pushti shudapaya nugasam. That devotional service is compared to eating a meal. When we eat a meal, we expect three things. If it's a good meal, if the food is good, we expect that we're going to get alleviation from our hunger. So that's quite a pleasant feeling. When you're really hungry and then you eat something, you feel really good. And also we get growing strength. And then there is a detachment there's growing strength, there's detachment from the hunger. And then there is Anu bhakti parashanu vyakti anyatra trika ekakala prapanamasya tashnita tushti, satisfaction. So we feel satisfied if the food tastes really good. We get alleviation for our hunger and we get growing strength. So in the same way, when devotional service is performed correctly, then we actually get detachment from the things that draw our minds away from Krishna. Why? Because they're not so attractive anymore. They may seem attractive in the absence of something more beautiful, but when something more beautiful, more pleasant, more tasteful is experienced, then we're not so much attached to the things, other things that are inferior. Of course, in the material world, sometimes people are attracted to things that are inferior, for just experiencing. That's one of the reasons why I said we came to the material world. According to our philosophy, the happiness of Krishna consciousness is unlimited. So why would anyone come to the material world to experience something which is less pleasurable? Well, the answer to that is that, first of all, when we come to the material world, from the spiritual world, we don't immediately fall into downtown Lithuania or Ljubljana. We come as a very elevated personality in the material world, and the happiness of Brahma is almost like a little taste of the spiritual world. And then from there, we gradually come down to where we are now. Or we can go up again to where we were before. In any case, the original happiness that we had in the spiritual world is unlimited, but probably just the example, just like a very rich person, he can have anything because he's so wealthy. But sometimes he wants to eat some fried peanuts just to see what they taste like. So in the spiritual world, where we're in love with the Supreme Person because he's all attractive, Krishna, is all beauty and all strength and all knowledge and all fame, and he's also all merciful, he's all loving. So we're unlimitedly attracted to him. But someone had the idea what it would be like to be Krishna or Radha. And someone said, well, why don't we try it? We'll do a little play and we'll act out as if we're Radha and Krishna and see how it goes. See how well the play goes. And here we are now, acting out the play. Because in the spiritual world it hasn't won any applause or any awards. But here we're still trying to give it the old college try, as they say in America. See if we can work it out this time and make the show special. But it always winds up the same. In any case, if one actually finds out what the real, who the real Radha is, who the real Krishna is, and what the real loving exchanges are, then that makes a very good novel or a very good story. It's called the Krishna Book, which we offer in sale here for the marathon. Special price. For those interested in a real love of story that goes on forever, we offer the Krishna Book to you. So that Krishna Book is the higher, that story of Radha and Krishna is the higher taste, and it gives all souls in all the material and spiritual worlds unlimited happiness. And at the same time, it lets us see everyone and everything in relationship to that story, because everyone has a part to play in the story of Radha and Krishna. Everyone is, can be engaged in that pastime if they want to. Here we're engaged in a perverted pastime, and therefore we don't really get the happiness and the love and the affection that we're looking for. But when we engage in the real pastime, then this pastime seems quite dull and uninteresting. And at the same time, one becomes detached from anything that promises us that it's going to give us the same happiness, because there can't be any same happiness compared to unlimited happiness, unlimited love, unlimited pleasure that goes on forever. So one is not a lord. But in the absence of that love affair between Radha and Krishna and their associates in the spiritual world, everyone is trying to pretend and advertise to us that this is the real thing. That this is actually what we're looking for. Just like one time, Sridhar Maharaj, as I've said before, he was at a festival in Poland called Woodstock. And at that festival, everyone is intoxicated, except for the devotees. And he was giving a lecture. There were actually thousands of people attending the lecture, because the devotees distribute very nice food at that festival. Many people come to it. But Sridhar Maharaj was very unique because in the midst of a crowd of intoxicated people, he started to preach about our regular principles, one of which is no intoxication. So obviously, the crowd became a little disturbed, and one of them threw a beer can at Sridhar Maharaj. Luckily it missed, but he picked it up and looked at it and said, it's not my brand. So everyone is looking for the brand that will make them happy. But if one is actually experiencing the real brand, then all these other brands seem fake. It's not our brand. But that has to be experienced, and therefore it mentions here it takes practice. That the tortoise, he's sleeping nicely in his shell. I mean, what could be more comfortable than having your own shell and you can move it around with you? I mean, it's almost like having your own mobile home. But the advantage is you don't need any gas. Oh, you need some gas, but a leaf here and there will fill it up. And so the tortoise is nicely in its shell, and there is promise of happiness on the outside. so the tortoise may venture outside its shell to see if there's anything interesting. And if it finds something interesting, then it may partake in that particular meal like a leaf. I know tortoises like leaves. And if it's not interesting, it goes back into its shell and takes rest. So in the same way, the devotee, when he finds out something interesting in the material world in relation to Krishna, then he goes out and uses his senses. Otherwise, he doesn't find any use for the material world except for using it in Krishna's service. Now, in modern society, people have invented so many things for their happiness. Matter of fact, because the amount of happiness is always limited, therefore they always have to come out with something new. I remember when I got my first computer, like 20 years ago or 25 years ago, it was came with a floppy disk. I think it had 750 kilobytes on the floppy disk. And then the next year, if you spent literally a couple of $1,000, you could become a power user, and it had 1 megabyte of storage in it. That was for the super users. And then eventually they came out a few years after that. You could spend $3,000 and get a 5 megabyte computer with a storage of 5 megabytes. Now for us nowadays, they have trilobytes. Millions of megabytes. And so the power user of yesterday is the loser today. Therefore, they always have to come up with something new and label it as something like very significant, very important. But ultimately, it winds up in the future to be completely insignificant. Just like the Himalayas, we're going to give birth. You know, the Himalayas and Mount Everest and everything. So it was shaking because it was about to give birth. So all the animals, all the people, they came to, they wanted to see what the Himalayas were going to give birth to. So this big roar went on, and suddenly the Himalayas gave birth, and a little mouse ran out. So that's what the material world is like. Even William Shakespeare said, it's full of sound and fury, but it signifies nothing. Everyone has their entrances and their exits, and everyone has their parts to play. But ultimately, much ado about nothing. Punat, punas, charavata, charavanana. But there's promises. They're expert, just like this is Christmas. Christmas used to be a religious holiday. It has something to do with religion. Actually, Christmas was never a religious holiday. It never had anything to do with religion. Because the actual birth of Jesus Christ was in spring. This is not spring. This is the solest. Really, I guess this is the shortest day of the year. Solest. Is it the solest? I don't remember. Anyhow, it's the shortest day of the year, and it was a pagan holiday that was celebrated by the pagans. And so that when the Christians wanted to take over, after King Constantine became a Christian, the emperor of the Roman Empire, then they wanted to popularize some religious festival, especially the birth of Jesus Christ. If they put it in the regular time, no one would take it seriously. But if they put it on the solar east equinox, it's not the equinox, it's solest, it's the longest day of the year, then the pagans were already celebrating it, and therefore naturally the holiday would go on. It's kind of like sometimes we have Rath Yatras, these festivals, and the city puts on a bigger Rath Yatra, and we take advantage of putting our cart there, and therefore we get a crowd of tens and thousands of people because we're taking part in someone else's program. Or if you want to run fast, it's very hard to run too fast. Or if you ride your bicycle very fast, you can only go so quick. But if you catch hold of a train, then your bicycle goes very quick. So similarly, by dovetailing their one's festival with a bigger festival, therefore it became a popular festival. And then there was this priest whose name is Father Noel, and he used to give candy to the children, so he became Santa Claus. Unfortunately, there were not so many dentists back then, so etc. In any case, the festival, the real festival, used to be religious, something to do with the Supreme Person, and therefore it was meant to inspire people's godly consciousness. And by having some spiritual consciousness, people were actually were happy previously, because the basis of their lives was some ultimate goal of life where they could actually achieve what they thought would be eternal happiness. Whatever vague it was about, you know, heaven or whatever, or the prospect of going to hell, at least they had some goal in life to achieve. But now the only goal of life is that if it feels good, then you do it. But it only feels good for a very short period of time, and therefore you have to keep on doing it, and then it gets worse and worse and worse. It's like in America, the place where the example for the world of how to become happy, last year I think something like 30,000 people died of overdoses of drugs. And this drug, I forget what it's called. Fentanyl. It's 1,000 times, sometimes it's 100 times, sometimes it's 1,000 times more addictive than heroin. So, you take it, and then after some time, it doesn't have any effect. So you have to take more of it. And then more of it, and if you take too much of it, you die right away. Matter of fact, if you just smell fentanyl and pure stuff, you die very quickly. So that's material existence. At the beginning it may be bitter, it may be like happiness, but at the end it's just like poison. And sometimes at the beginning it's poison, at the end it's worse. But there's happiness there at the beginning, and therefore because we're happiness seeking, we demand some happiness, and therefore whatever is advertised, like now it's Christmas, and in all the stores they're going to advertise how wonderful their products are. On the billboards, they never show an old crippled person who's diseased and advertise their product. It's always some happy person. Or even they used to advertise a cigarette, Marlboro. Do they still have that cigarette? Marlboro. And it was always a cowboy. And he was smoking, and his horse wasn't smoking but was smiling. I guess he was getting the smoke from the cowboy. Unfortunately, the cowboy in that Marvel advertisement actually died of lung cancer. And so did the horse. So it's advertised that this is going to be something special, this is going to be something new. The iPhone, I don't know what they're up to now, maybe 14 they're up to, or 15, or whatever it is. This is going to send you to heaven. You just turn it on and you're in bliss. You and the iPhone will shake out of ecstasy. But then why did they come up with 15 and 16 and 25 if this was actually the ultimate goal of life? Because there is no ultimate goal of life in the material world. It's only promises. This will make you happy. It's the allurement, it's the promise that actually excites us. The experience is not exactly what we thought it was going to be. Generally speaking, it's less than what we thought it was going to be. And sometimes it's the opposite of what we thought it would be. But still, people have to do something in the material world for happiness. So a little advertisement and a little satisfaction, people work very hard for it. The happiest country in the world, anyone know what people think they're the happiest? Bangladesh. Why do they think they're happy in Bangladesh? What is there in Bangladesh? How many movie theaters there are in Bangladesh? How many subways are there? How many hotels are there? How many golf courses are there? What is there in Bangladesh that make people happy? Yes. Yes, they have nothing to worry about. Because every year the floods come and take away their house. It's all pretty. And they learn to sleep on the floor, so they don't really need anything. They have happiness in their home life. They have relationships with each other. And generally speaking, you know, everyone is equally poor there, so there's no reason to be envious. So generally people are quite content, simply appreciating each other and helping each other, serving each other. And they're religious, either Muslim or Hindu there, so they have something to look forward to. They're not interested in material life, so they can focus in on spiritual life very easily. So that makes them happy. I remember when I grew up, which is just after the dinosaurs stopped roaming the earth. It's quite a long time ago. No one on my block ever, no one had any parents who had got divorced or even separated. There was rumors that someone in my neighborhood, their parents got divorced, but it was never confirmed. And it wasn't that the people who I grew up with were overly religious. They were hardly religious. I mean, they were religious to some degree. I mean, when the Christmas was there, everyone celebrated it. I can remember every Christmas I celebrate. I remember one time I put my sock out. My sister put her sock out. And I woke up in the morning, and her sock was twice as big as mine. I couldn't figure out what happened. So it turned out she woke up earlier. And took everything out of my sock. And I couldn't figure it out. You know, God didn't love me. God may have loved me, but Santa Claus definitely didn't. But people celebrate it. Even when I was doing the airport in Philadelphia, I was doing it every year. And there was this mood, even like 20 years ago, you know, when Christmas Day at least, there was this kind of like mood of something spiritual was happening. And then that was something. And then after that, after year, it just went down and down and down. And it was just like madness. It was just like some kind of madness that had overcome the people. And it was just completely materialism. In any case, we can understand that even nowadays, they try to make things attractive. Maybe they'll dress people in a reindeer as a reindeer or something, or try to make something relate to something that's going on in the season and try to make it really nice, you know. They're super expert at attracting people. But when you buy it, it's the same old thing. When I grew up, hardly I had any toys. I had little plastic soldiers or something, you know, I used to imagine. But nowadays, I think the children, I mean, I've gone to devotees' houses where even the children have a whole room just full of toys. And half of them are broken because after some time they get frustrated and they just break the thing. That's their happiness, to see it broken. So although they've expanded whatever the children want, the parents buy them, but the children aren't any happier. They're just more spoiled, that's all. They're more bratty, as they say in America. They act like they're the center of attention. And maybe their parents are forced to try to act like they're the center of attention. That's if they're civilized parents. They don't smack you, stupid guy. They don't smack the kid around. But anyhow, if they're civilized, they kind of tolerate their children. But that doesn't mean that everyone else can tolerate them. So they've gone to think that they're center of the world, and they become more and more less the center of people's attention. They just want to get away from them. So the purport is, if we want to be happy and peaceful, if we want to actually be productive, we have to find something spiritual to take shelter of, something that actually matches our spiritual personality, our spiritual identity, which is eternal. We want something that's permanent. We'd like this body to be permanent, but it's not. But at least we ourselves within the body were eternal. So we need something to take shelter of so that we can realize our eternality. So that's what Krishna is all about. Stop there, thank you. Merry Christmas. Any questions or comments? Or we wish you Merry Krishna. The Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.